What's going on, everybody? I'd like to welcome y'all back to Sync Music Mondays, music licensing in the coolest form. Shout out to my brother JS, aka The Best. As y'all know, he always does our intros for us, but he couldn't be here. He's traveling right now, so I'm gonna hold it down for the team. And big out, shout out to y'all, man. Shout out to all the listeners, man. Our viewership is through the roof. Subscriptions are crazy, man. And we do this for y'all. We love financial literacy, love talking to musicians about how to monetize their music from, you know, just the conception of the song to actually monetizing it. And as always, we're starting off with the word of the day. So the word of the day for today is, and y'all see this up on the screen, the level up is about improving, not impressing. I'll say that again. The level up is about improving, not impressing. So a lot of times in life, I think sometimes people do things. They do it to be flashy. They do it for social media. They do it for the gram. They do it for Twitter. But it's about improving. You know, I always tell people, especially musicians, you know, never strive for perfection. Just strive for constant progress. So you don't have to be perfect, but at the end of the day, as long as you're in a better situation than you were the previous year, you're golden. All right. So, you know, just keep it moving, man. And that is the word of the day. But today we got a dope, dynamic, special, talented guest, man. So, you know, just to give you guys some insight into this guest, man, this is actually a good friend of mine. I consider him a brother, and he is extremely talented from the production tip. He's really like one of the goats when it comes to chill hop, lo-fi beats, all of that stuff. Like, he is extremely talented, man. It is no other than hailing from Germany, my brother from another mother, Flocalist. What's up, bro?
Yo, bro,
how
you doing? thanks for the amazing introduction, guys.
I got you, bro. So I kind of gave like a brief oversight of, you know, like basically who you are. But tell the people in your own words, like, who is Flocalist?
I'm considering myself as a trumpet player, first of all, and a trumpet player that got on the to the beat making scene by coincidence 7 years ago, and since then it's been improvement. It's gone like this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to give y'all perspective, so, you know, because I got a big up Flocalist, man, just to give y'all perspective, right? So I know everybody sees like Spotify Wrapped and they talk about numbers and statistics, right? So, like, for the year on Spotify, I had like 1.3 million streams, right? So I'm like, all right, this is cool. And then I go to my brother's page, I see Flocalist, man. 80 million streams on Spotify for the year, man. I said, Jesus Christ, man. This is, I'm like, all right, let me just hide my 1.3 million. I know.
For me, to be honest, it's been a really, really crazy year. I don't know if I will ever top it, you know. I'm super grateful for the statistics, even if the statistics themselves don't mean that much, you know what I mean? Or it's like... yeah, there's much more to it than just this, but yeah, the numbers have been crazy, and as I said, I don't know if there will be another year like this. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah, 80 million is crazy, man. So you know, so I want to start from the beginning, man, because you know, we got so many dope, talented musicians that listen to Sync Music Mondays, and I know a lot of them would love to get to that point, but a lot of people, you know, simply don't, or, you know, they do what they can, you know. But I mean, to get 80 million streams on Spotify within a year is an amazing accomplishment. So salute to you on that, bro. So I want to start from the beginning. Like, how did you get started in music? Like, what was your beginnings with music?
I'm a third generation brass player. So my grandfather was a trombone player, father as well. I picked the trumpet, and I grew up in a very classical way. I was taught music from the very beginning. My mom is a flute player, and she also teaches music theory and music history. So I got this perfect blend for some good basics. I went to study music at 17. And the goal was always to be in an orchestra, which I'm doing as well right now. But on the way to the orchestra, I just, as I said, by coincidence, I got into the beat making scene, and today everything looks great, actually. So
that's dope, man. That's dope. So what was that first experience like when you made your first beat? Like, let's start from that. Like, what equipment did you use? How did it come out? Were you happy with how it came out, or were you kind of like, you know, like, I know for me personally, when I first started doing music, a lot of times I would listen to it and it was like cringeworthy. I'm like, oh no, I got a lot of work to do. But that was years ago, right? I was younger. I didn't get to the place where I'm at, obviously, now. So, you know, how did you feel about it? Like, you know, talk about that first track that you made.
First track was a Pete Rock copy. So I just copied Think Twice on an iPad. Got a producing program from my brother, and I just tested it out a little bit. And was I happy with the beat back then? Yeah, of course, because it was the first creation, my first electronic creation, and felt great. Right after that, I started to experiment a little bit myself. And actually, my second beat, it's a beat that I released, and I think today it has like 3 million streams or something. It's just like from the beginning, I felt that this thing was right. It was a perfect fit for me, and then, got hooked, definitely.
Wow, man. So, you know, you're a talented trumpet player. Like, it's not just about, like, beats. So with that first Pete Rock style beat that you did you incorporate trumpet in that first track too, or did trumpet kind of come later? Like, how did you go about incorporating the trumpet?
I first of all, I needed to check how the electronics worked, and then after I figured out how to record something, and that was in the second beat, I immediately added some trumpet. First one was just like kind of a copycat try how to use the program. And that being said, of course, Fruity Loops on the iPad didn't work for more than a couple of months, and then I switched to Ableton, and that's what I'm still using today. Yeah.
Got you. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask, like, what do you use as far as, like, to actually make your production? I know some producers prefer to use certain types of things. Like, some producers love the MP. Others use different types of programs. Like, what's your setup like? Like, what are you using to make your beats?
My setup expanded a bit, meaning I've got a studio. I'm sharing a studio with another good friend of mine. His name is Satir. He's also a chill hop producer, lo-fi producer, hip hop producer. So back there we have a little bit more equipment, but I still have my little home studio as well. I have my Adam audio speakers. I have a normal cheap Focusrite interface, and I have a cheap MIDI keyboard where I just can play everything with, because in the end you're doing everything with the stuff that's on your computer, like plugins, keyboards, whatever. And I'm always topping it with some trumpet. And then, that's my home setup compared to my studio setup. Like,
All right. In the studio setup, what are you using in the studio setup?
I have some Yamaha speakers. We have an Apollo interface. We have an Arturia MIDI keyboard. We have some analog synthesizers as well, which I really enjoy. For example, the Juno is a really cool one. The microphone is a little bit better. Like, we have a Neumann microphone. So we upgrade a little bit on everything. Yeah.
Cool, man. You know, you said something interesting, and I like this, and me and Jay had spoke about this on another episode. You was like, you had some cheap equipment at home. And you know what? Like I always tell artists, I look at, like, musical equipment a lot of times like clothing, right? Someone could put on, like, expensive clothing, but it doesn't mean that they'll rock it right. Like, you know, it's not what's on you, it's what's in you. So I always tell artists, be cognizant and be aware that you can make the best of what you have. You don't have to have a $15,000 microphone to make amazing music. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely. I started with a microphone that's worth, I think, 150 euros. Mm-hmm. And I've made the first 2 years I was producing, I played everything with this mic, and some tracks of it also, yeah, got a bit bigger. So I definitely agree with you on that one. And still right now, like, as I said, what I'm having here in my small home studio also works for particular tracks, or when I'm having an idea and I want to produce it and I'm sitting in my room, I want to do it here with the things I have, and I'm also finishing it with the things I have, and then I'm not driving to the studio for half an hour to finish the track there. No, I want to be here and work on it. Yeah,
of course, man. So I want to pivot and talk about, like, the lo-fi chill hop scene. When I first started doing music, this was like years ago, we had like, you know, initially, like, when I first heard hip hop, that was like Big Daddy Kane, LL Cool J, Run DMC, all the greats, all the goats. And then hip hop went through transitions. So, you know, we had 80s rap, 90s rap, the 2000s, you know, you know, we had our progress, you know, we had DMX, all these different, Jada Kiss, The Lox, all these different talented artists, Jay-Z, of course. And then now, you know, I started to see throughout the years, like, the emergence of basically like chill hop, you know, and lo-fi, and these chill, laid back beats, where I know, like, a lot of people, a lot of times they just, whether they're driving or they're just chilling out, whether they're doing work and they just want something in the background to play to help them chill out, this became like a thing. And I started to notice that on YouTube, like, these channels were exploding that had chill hop. So can you kind of talk about the chill hop scene for people that aren't too familiar with it? Like, you know, what is it specifically? And then we could kind of transition into how you, you know, kind of got really involved in that scene. So what is chill hop or lo-fi, like, in your own words? What is it?
Yeah, for me, it comes from jazz, or from jazz hop or jazz instrumentals. And there were like a couple of producers that I'm really celebrating. For example, Pete Rock, as I mentioned before. And then, of course, there's Jay Dilla. Like, he changed everything. I'm actually reading this biography that came out, this Jay Dilla biography, Time, it's called. I have it, like, maybe I have it right here. One second. Like, have you read this one?
I haven't read it, man, but that's, that looks...
for my birthday, like, a couple of weeks ago.
Cool, man. Yeah. When was your birthday, man?
The 30th of October.
Oh, man, I'm a crappy friend. I'm sorry. Happy belated birthday.
I wanted to mention it to make it clear that you missed it. No, but so this book is a really, really nice description of how everything changed, how he changed the rhythms, how the beats became more wonky, like all of the style changed with the old school beat making, or like the old style beat making compared to his beats. And I think, this mix turned into a huge instrumental scene. Maybe it started really with jazzy beats and then went more into these chilled, lo-fi, sleepy kind of beats. I can't really say how everything started. Of course, I also have my lo-fi gods, like the one I'm always having on the top of my mind is Philanthrope. Oh, one second. For me, he's kind of the godfather of the style, like, or for the sound that I like.
What's his name?
Philanthrope.
Philanthrope. Okay.
It's called. Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, I think it's just a genre that worked well and that exploded. I don't know why. Maybe because it's listenable in every situation. Like, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's definitely different. You know, like, I love all styles of hip hop. I love, you know, old school hip hop. I love new school hip hop. I love, you know, commercial hip hop. I love mainstream jazz rap. So yeah, when I heard Chill Hop, I'm like, all right, this is cool. It's a vibe. I could see why people definitely like it. It's therapeutic. You know, I know a lot of people.
Sure. I also find it difficult to call it chill hop or to call it lo-fi because the beats there are also really, really different. Like there are a lot of different styles in this particular genre. So to say that I like the genre, but I'm actually really picking artists that I like and tracks that I like and putting my own plays together or whatever. It's not that I like everything that's being released. Yeah.
Who would you say are some of the people, you know, like when you think about hip hop, right? Like old school rappers who have transcended to the new school. Like, you know, people will say, all right, of course, Hov, Nas, there's certain rappers that are still up there. So who would you say is, like, in your opinion, the guys or women who are really, like, dominating, you know, like yourself right now, who are really doing, like, they're kind of, like, really at the forefront of this movement?
I mean, the craziest streaming guy I've seen, like with the Spotify rap stuff, was Softy. I think he had like 177 million streams in 1 year, which is...
What's his name? Softy?
Softy, yeah.
What is that, like S-O-F-T-I?
F-T-Y, yeah.
Wait, how do you spell it? I just wanted to look him up.
S-O-F-T-Y, yeah.
S-O-F-T-Y.
I mean, that's the craziest rap I've seen, like a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just there. That's, yeah, there I mean streaming wise. Like for me, I'm always calling Mr. Käfer. He's always one of my favorites. Like he's always killing it.
Shout out Mr. Käfer, man. That's my guy, man. Good guy, man. Shout out to Käfer. Yeah.
I'm always calling him. I mean, all of my Munich friends are also on top of the scene, like Satyr, Living Room, Rudy Raw. I mean, all of the friends. I hope I'm not forgetting anyone, but yeah, Myriad. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of people doing well. I think that's also a beautiful thing about the genre, that a lot of people can live and can take profit from the style of music.
I just went on to check his stuff. Amazing streams, man. I think that, you know, the streaming game has really revolutionized how music for artists can be monetized. I know before, like back in the days, it was, you know, for us at least, when I first got started, you had to get a record deal. So we were just always on the grind, the hustle. Politicking had a lot of record deals. And the way we monetized was through record sales and touring. That was like the main way that you can make money. Streaming wasn't a thing back then. You know, it was more CDs. It was a physical product that we had to monetize. Now with streaming, it's amazing because it's like you can monetize your music simply by you just set it and forget it. You know, you release your music, people stream it, you get compensated.
Sure. And now it's working the other way around. Like people are self-releasing or getting bigger and are getting record deals that are actually mad. Like record deals are being thrown around right now at people that are streaming well. And you always have to be careful because you don't want to get into something that that takes away your freedom, that takes away your ability to self-release. So yeah, wait for the right deal and do it when you want to or but stay careful. Yeah.
That, now you bring up a great point because, you know, this is financial literacy for musicians. So we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? So we talk about being smart when it comes to contracts. Can you talk about, like, what are some things that artists should look out for? Like, for me, example, I've been presented with a lot of record deals. Some were good, some were terrible. One thing that I always avoid in contracts for me personally is the term perpetuity. So if someone says, oh, you know, we're going to have the authorization to control your music in perpetuity, that term means forever. So it's like you want to avoid stuff like that because, you know, in business, what's good on Monday might be bad by Friday. So you could start out good, right? But then, you know, that relationship might go sour, might go left, and you always need to give yourself an out. You always need to have a back door. So, you know, it's always good to have a term. I tell artists for the contracts, like, you know, all right, let's set a term for this, whether it's 1 year, 2 years. So at the end of that year, you can reassess and determine if you really want to proceed with this or do something else. So what's something that you think artists should look out for when it comes to contracts?
Yeah, it's really difficult to say because it depends on which deal. If a label is offering you a deal where you where they are pushing your streams, where they are giving you live concerts, where they are doing music licensing for you, you need to see in which way they can push you and if it can push you forward, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I don't want to be completely exclusive. I don't want to be dependent, not completely, you know. I would always go for a certain time frame and then choose for freedom again or whatever. And yeah, also something I'm really careful about is my publishing rights. I can give away percentages of streaming rights and stuff, but when it comes to publicity, this is like your... how would I say it in English? It will be important later on in life. So I'm keeping these royalties and these rights as much as possible to myself. Yeah.
That's a big gem. And that's important that you brought that up, because for a lot of musicians, when you talk about publishing rights, you're talking about performing rights organizations. So whether you got ASCAP, BMI, and for artists, it's very important, like you said, that's the long term for us as musicians. So when you're a musician, you don't have health insurance, right? You don't have a retirement plan like you have a 9-to-5. So what is your retirement plan? That's your publishing, because when you own your publishing in the long term, you can monetize that. And that's money that you get. We call that mailbox money in the business industry. So that's money that just comes to you from your labor. But if you're in a position where you sign away your publishing, that means that that company, that record label, that music licensing company, they will own that in perpetuity and you won't see a dime off that. So I tell artists, you know, make sure that you're in a position where you negotiate your publishing accordingly, because you got a lot of companies out there that are just, I mean, it's called a spade a spade. It's just greed. You know, they want to take 100% for what they're giving you in return. The math ain't mathing. It's not worth it.
I got a lot of mails and offers of companies that just offered a sum of money for my entire catalog, and for owning the publishing rights for the next, I don't know how many years, you know? And I mean, I could understand for someone that really is in need of money or needs money like fast to take a deal like that. But if you're actually having a good life and if you're not in financial danger or anything, I would never do that, because they know why they are offering you a contract like that, because they will always get their money back and even more. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, where I would consider or where I already did actually, where I would give away publishing royalties is if I know that for this particular track, the company can offer me a nice licensing deal or put me into a movie or whatever. Yeah, of course, if they are placing me in a nice place, then they're helping me and they deserve a percentage of the track. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that, you know, and for most musicians, if you've never had a sync licensing deal, if you've never dealt with a sync agent or a music licensing company, long story short, on the back end with music licensing, they will strike a deal with you, which is 50-50. So meaning that the artist retains 100% of the writer's share of publishing and they retain 100% of the publishing share. And that's a common deal that they do in music licensing. And then you get paid up front and you get paid on the back end. So for example, you can get $10,000 for getting a song in a TV show or a movie. You'll get that depending on the percentage split that you negotiate with the sync agent or the music licensing company. That'll determine how much you get. So, for example, if you get paid $10,000 for a placement in a movie, but the deal is 50-50, the sync agent will take $5,000 and you would get $5,000 because it's a 50-50 split. Then on the back end, in terms of the publishing, you would get 100% of the writers. They get 100% of the publishing, depending on the company. So there's different types of deals out there, and you just have to be mindful of what you sign. And like Flocal has said, depends on your situation, too. Like, if you're an artist that really needs money, you know, sometimes you tend to settle for deals that aren't ideal. So it's always to, you know, be in a position of leverage. Like, you don't ever want to be that artist that's like so down and out that you'll just take anything, because in the long term that can hurt you, you know?
Yeah. I've heard of cases, or I know people who've signed contracts for too many years and actually missed the big high of the lo-fi scene. Yeah, I've seen it happen. I won't make that mistake. Yeah.
It's like, you know, you gotta be smart. You gotta handle your business. So, you know, I got a question for you. Like, you know, in terms of your projects and stuff like that, because, I mean, you've got so many, man. What are some of your highlights? Like, what are some that you're, like, really proud of that, you know, like, really stand out? Or, you know, because you got a lot of music, man. So, you know, what are your joys?
The thing that I'm, like, right now, I'm in the process of releasing a solo album, and I didn't release a solo album for 2 years, I think. So that's something I'm really, really looking forward to. And I'm also really proud of, because musically I could just, show myself and do what I really like. I have another, like, I released a vinyl with Mr. Käfer. It's called Now Again. And we're releasing a second album. It's called Now Again 2. We're releasing the first single in February, and this one's also gonna be a good one. So my future projects are the ones that I'm loving the most right now, and
dope, man. Yeah, that's fire, man. That one, the Now Again, that one that had the two superheroes on the cover, was that the one?
No, there was a track we also did together. Like, the Now Again, we had like a more abstract artwork. The two superheroes, this was a compilation I curated. I invited like a lot of my beatmaker friends, and everyone got a superhero character, was drawn by someone who was also working on Marvel stuff. So like a real pro, like he knew how to draw superheroes. And that compilation also got, it's still running actually. Like, not all of the tracks are released yet. That was also a really interesting project. Yeah.
Yeah, the artwork is really dope on it. I said, yeah, this definitely looked like some Marvel stuff, man. So I see, you know, he definitely put it together, man.
Yeah. Also I curated this for a label called OK Wall. Super good friends of mine. We got the idea over a year ago to curate a compilation like this. And like, all of the characters are great. It's so funny to see all of the producers in like a new kind of type of warrior. Good stuff.
Dope, man. That's fire, man. So we got this question, man. It's the Back to the Future question, man. You know, if you could go back in time and talk to your younger self and give your younger self some advice, man, what would you tell yourself?
I would tell myself to take a little bit more care about life next to music, my health, just stuff like that. And I would tell myself to stress less, because everything will be okay. Everything turned out the way it had to turn out, and I always, like, it turned out the way I always dreamt it would be. And I stressed a lot about that. Like, existential fear was my words. I was too stressed. Now I'm slowly relaxing. Yeah.
Good, man. And you know what? Sometimes, man, the irony of it all is that everything works out exactly how it should, right? So it's kind of like, I don't know. Did you ever see that movie called The Butterfly Effect? So you know how that movie turns out, right? It's like, you know, when you go back and you try to change things, it's like sometimes it alters other things. So, you know, it's funny because I would think that too. Like, you know, my mentality is always of a hustler, right? Because I'm such a businessman, so I'm always getting it. I'm always successful. I'm always getting all these wins. But no matter how many wins I get, it's like there's always more wins to get. So, you know, I tell myself that too. Like, oh, you know, if I can go back and talk to my younger self, maybe I'll just tell myself to chill. But, you know, sometimes the fear of the unknown is what drives us to get to where we have to go. You know what I'm saying?
Sounds really basic, but love the process is really something that I'm holding on to right now. Yeah. My biggest life goal was to get a job in an orchestra, like a fixed job in an orchestra. And I achieved that already a couple of years ago. And after that, like, first of all, I needed to calm down from this life goal, like from the stress, from the anxiety, whatever. But once I've settled and I've accepted that I reached this goal, I got time to focus on other stuff, and I discovered that I got the exact same mindset as before. You know,
yeah.
It's, I will never become 100% peaceful or whatever.
Yeah,
I will always go for the next thing, and I like it. I finally accepted that I like this part about myself. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, man. It's like the pursuit of happiness, right? For lack of better words, right? Just always wanting more and striving for more. And not that you're not grateful, but it's just, you know, I think as musicians and creatives, that's what we are, because we're creatives, right? And it's an ongoing process. The process never stops, right? It's like once you make one project, you're on to the next three. So the pursuit of, you know, happiness, the pursuit of just being a creative. And yeah, man, I love it too, man. Like, I just love the process, you know, and just, you know, making things happen.
Yeah, and I also love to see the results, to hear the results, to finish projects, to spread it on the internet, you know. I also do need confirmation in order to get energy again. So if I see that a track is working, or that people are listening to my music or getting a comment, I'm getting energy to make something new, and this is the never-ending cycle for me.
Yeah, yeah, it's a constant cycle of growth, man, you know. So I got another question for you, bro. So, you know, we ask people about mantras all the time. I got two. Collaboration is greater than competition. I love building with like-minded people. And persistence wears down resistance, as always. So what is your mantra that you have that keeps you going, keeps you motivated?
Also really standard, but consistency. Just stay consistent, never give up. Be disciplined, like, do it every day again and again and again, and it will work. That's my mantra. I wouldn't say that I got lucky or something. It's really just being resilient and never stopping and always believing. Yeah.
Yeah. There's, I agree with that.
It takes a lot of energy, but then once you achieve these small things, you feel better.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. 110%. It's like, yeah, the constant process of repetition, you know, like all of the most successful people I know, including myself, are consistently elevating. So we keep it going. You know, the artists I know that are the least successful, they lack consistency. You know, like I know artists who they put out a project or a song every month, right? And they're killing it. Then I know artists who they've been working on the same project or the same song for the past 2-3 years. Right? So I can see the difference between why some people win and why some people don't. And it's the consistency, like, you know, constantly putting in the work, constantly evolving, constantly growing. And that helps you elevate, you know? Huh?
Yeah. And on top of that, I also think that people need to be realistic, like estimate what your qualities are. Do things that you're good at. There are a lot of people that are consistent, but maybe are not there yet, and so it will also not work, or the opposite. But yeah, or the opposite can also happen. People that are very good but aren't consistent. I think it's like a combination of both, and then and estimating well what are your skills and your weaknesses. I know my weaknesses very well, and I try not to show them in my songs, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There are other places for that, but not in my music.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely got to be in a space and place where it's like, you know thyself, you know, that's key. If you don't know nothing else in this world, you got to know yourself, and you got to be able to be honest with yourself too. I think a lot of people lie to themselves, you know, And then they get defensive, like, when you confront them with the truth. But, you know, if you can't be honest with nobody else, be honest with yourself. Like, okay, what am I doing? You know, regardless of what it is, whether you want to get music and TV and film, whether you want to increase your streaming numbers, whether you want to tour, whatever it is, if you're not getting the results that you want, then you have to take accountability and take ownership and say, all right, why is it that I don't see the results that I want? Now, what can I do that's realistic for me to get these things accomplished, you know?
I mean, I wasn't talking about not being honest in lyrics or something, you know? I'm an instrumental artist. I'm just purely talking about skill and about realism. Yeah,
that's key, man. That's key. So you know, I wanted to ask you, man, also about the scene in Germany, man. Like, what's the music scene like there over there? You know, I know that, you know, you got the chill hop scene, the lo-fi scene and all that, but yeah, overall, like, what's the culture like over there when it comes to hip hop?
I think there are a lot of people with a really good taste here. I got so lucky because I'm actually from Belgium. Mm-hmm. And I moved to Germany 8 or maybe now already 9 years ago. And I've come to a country where instrumental hip hop is holy, where there are so many good producers and so many good people. And I also knew that I wanted to get to know them. So I'm still doing it, of course, but now they became friends. So it's not like I'm... Like before, I was always driving to the people I like listening to or I wanted to make something with. And right now, all of these people became friends and they are visiting me or I'm going there. But it's yeah, a little bit different than in the beginning. But of course, I was very lucky that, for example, Mr. Käfer, super good example. I was lucky that I liked his music so much and that a trip to his home was only 2 hours away. So that's what I did. I met everyone and they became friends. Yeah. And the scene is great. I love it. Yeah.
That's dope, man. And I think that's, you know, that's key to like building organic relationships, not forcing them, just things coming together and just making great music, man, because y'all make great music together, man. It's like really dope, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. For example, with him, the process is amazing. It's always going like this. Mm-hmm. And yes, when I felt the vibe on the internet, like, because you're writing with a lot of producers and then sending music back and forth. And then when I felt the connection, I immediately wanted to meet this person in real life, because that's where the friendship starts where
of course
it's easier to connect. Yeah.
Of course. Absolutely, man. Well, yeah, man, you killing it. You killing it, bro. So I guess, you know, what's on the horizon, man? What's next? I know you got like 100 projects coming out, man. So what's going on? What can the people expect next, man, from the GOAT, Flocalist, man?
Yeah, so the solo album, the album with Mr. Käfer, after I'm doing another solo album, I have all of the music ready for the next year, I think. And next to that, I have 4 other projects, like 2 in a different style, and then 2 other lo-fi projects, which I don't want to elaborate on because some are kind of anonymous. But I'm working on 4 other artist profiles at the same time, and dropping as much music as on the Flocalist profile, and it's kind of mad, yeah.
Dope, man. I'm happy to hear it, man. And how can the people connect with you too? Like, what's your social platforms that you're on so they can follow you?
I always like when people write me on Instagram or they follow me on Instagram. I have a TikTok since a couple of months. Mm-hmm. And those are the 2 platforms I'm using the most.
Got you. So Instagram, TikTok, and it's what, at Flocalist?
Yeah, Flocalist. That's I'm very lucky with my name because no one else is using that. So if you type Flocalist, you will always find me first.
I'll find you. Right. And I had one more question too that I had to circle back on. For a lot of producers out there that they're making tracks, they like the lo-fi scene, chill hop, they want to get involved. Like, what's a gem that you would give them for any producer that wants to get involved in that scene that's on the come up? Like, what gem could you give them, or a couple of gems?
I would say if your music is on the level to release it, release through as many different labels as possible, collab with as many people as possible, and get to know people, get to know the network, get to know the scene, and the rest will go from itself.
Fire, man. Well, this was dope, bro. This was fire, man. Great interview, man. And, you know, you're actually the first guest that we had that's, you know, a producer in the lo-fi chill hop scene, man. So you are the trailblazer.
Yeah, man. I watched some of the interviews before. I thought it was gonna be a little bit different, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, of course, man. Most definitely, man. So yeah, man, this was dope having you on, man. Appreciate you, man. And you know, big shout out to you, man. I know great things. You're gonna keep killing it, man.
Yeah, let's make some tracks as well. Let's do some together.
Oh yeah, definitely. For the people that don't know, man, yeah, me and Flocalist, man, that's my guy, man. Like we do some really great music together. So yeah, we got some more stuff coming too, man. We're gonna lay some up. Yeah, man. Most definitely. Until next week, y'all. Like JS say.